Well, good afternoon. 407 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, 5 o'clock, Mercedes Schlapp will be with us. Then 5:30, we talk to Stephen Nelson, the White House correspondent for the New York Post. One of a bunch of guys who got a chance to ask some questions yesterday of the President of the United States. In the room yesterday was our next guest. Take a listen. Here's Peter Ducey of the Fox News Channel asking a question of the president yesterday.
President Biden promised to bring decades of D.C. experience to the Oval Office.
Oh, this is that's Peter Ducey talking to Jen Psaki. How about this? How about we just talk to Peter Ducey? He's on the phone right now. Hello, Peter.
Hey, hello.
Sorry, I messed up the audio cut there. But what I meant to play was an exchange yesterday where you asked why Joe Biden is trying to take the country so far to the left. He disagreed with that assessment.
He did, and I get that he doesn't want to be pegged as a member of the Bernie Sanders wing of the party, but he had just admitted in this press conference that as he's trying to jam through like this voting rights legislation, he's not really engaging with Republicans at all. And so it seems like the guy who during the Democratic primaries, who was promising to be the most progressive president ever if he won, is coming out more than the guy who promised to be a uniter. And that's what I was trying to get at. But
yeah, I mean, it seems like all, you know, everything from his Build Back Better legislation to the March 2021 coronavirus relief package, all of those things, you know, in each of them, there's like more and more checks being cut to be sent out to the American public in an environment where that has, at the White House's admission, just spurred all sorts of inflation that's made us all poorer by extension. And so these are the very types of policies that a Bernie Sanders would support. And this is what Joe Biden's been supporting as president.
Right. And he still basically talks about it as the job's almost done. And so he's not going to change his approach. He does not buy the polls that have him completely, historically low, recent history anyway. But, you know, he is a guy, I get why he doesn't like the polls, because for a long time he was pulling at the bottom of the Democratic primary pack, and he was pulling behind Trump, and he lives at the White House now. So I get why he doesn't necessarily go with the public opinion.
I was not surprised that he called on you yesterday. That's a typical move for him, even if he's got a list of other people's names. He likes to call on Peter Ducey. What I was surprised by was that he decided to call on everyone. I mean, James Rosen of Newsmax got to ask questions. Stephen Nelson of the New York Post. I'm just watching as each of these people are being called on, and I'm thinking to myself, boy, Jen Psaki must be having a conniption fit right now that he's calling on people that, you know, she clearly would like him to avoid. But he did it yesterday. He called on all sorts of people. What did you think of that very long press conference, and what was the wisdom behind that?
You know, they obviously only planned for 10 questions. There were 10 names on the list. And I know that because once he got to the 10th person, he like put a piece of paper away. But it was the longest. I've been with Biden now for like 3 years. That's the longest I've ever seen him talk, just him. And good for him. If this is kind of something that they think is going to help him. He was talking yesterday about how he thinks a lot of the problems are with perception. And, well, you know, if somebody thinks this about my policy, or if somebody doesn't like my policy, it's just because I haven't explained it well enough. Great. Then let's talk to you 2 hours every time.
Yes.
Because you heard, you know, there was a lot of Russia. There was a lot of Build Back Better kind of stuff. But it revealed so much about the state of mind and the frame of mind of this guy, where, you know, whether you like him or not, he will be a historical figure. And so we got to know more about what's going on in his head.
No question. And every journalistic instinct that I have, it says the same thing as you, which is like, we need more time with this guy and we need to ask him questions. But I do think, just as a basic matter, that yesterday was bad for him in terms of the way that he answered questions and the types of problems he created yesterday. So obviously you mentioned Russia. The White House has spent the last 24 hours trying to insist that he didn't mean what he said, or that he's actually tougher on Russia than he portrayed yesterday. And some of the criticism that he's receiving is that he may very well invite an international incident based on his answer yesterday, suggesting that he would tolerate Russian aggression towards Ukraine. And then additionally, it seemed yesterday that he was sowing in a pretty big way doubt in the result of this November's election, suggesting that if his federal elections legislation didn't get passed, as it didn't last night, then that would result in an illegitimate result come this November. This is a mess, Peter Ducey, and it seems like the White House is trying to clean it all up.
Oh, yeah, and the latest one a few minutes ago was Jen Psaki saying that even if voting rights doesn't get passed, the president thinks that the election results in the midterms will be legitimate. Okay, that's great. Good to know. Not what the president said yesterday. And this is a case where this White House that relies a lot on a traditional group of professional communicators led by Jen Psaki and Kate Bedingfield, you know, it's like forget what you heard. Don't believe your eyes and your ears. This is what the president meant. Let us tell you.
Right. And I recall it was in the middle of last year, I believe, that Jen Psaki did an interview on David Axelrod's podcast where she kind of famously signaled that they try and limit the amount of time he spends speaking to reporters. And, you know, she indicated that, you know, he tends to go off script despite the fact that they don't want him to. He will answer some questions in moments where they prefer that he be quiet. And then there's been other reporting that we've seen that members of the White House comms shop, or at least members of the White House staffers there, are embarrassed by the president's answers and will, for instance, shut the television off if they see him giving freewheeling answers on television. Do you get a sense of that working in the White House?
I definitely have gotten a sense that they try to limit his interactions. But like yesterday, sitting there, and you know, I had plenty of time just to stare at him for an hour and 50 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I got a sense that he was enjoying it. And you know, he's the president; he can do whatever he wants. If he wasn't enjoying, my personal experience, and anybody with YouTube can go look it up. The guy likes to mix it up with reporters. And I think he really enjoyed yesterday the opportunity to kind of give his side of the story. And so I know that they try, these professionals around him, professional Washington Democrats, try to keep him bottled up. But if you give him a microphone and you don't literally take him away or like put a helicopter there that he has to walk to, he'll stay and chat, apparently.
Right. I do think that yesterday was also kind of a demonstration for him that he wanted to prove that he could go the distance, that he had vitality. Because one of the nagging questions, although it doesn't always show up in the briefing room, it did yesterday, courtesy of James Rosen reading public polling, is the extent to which that he has the stamina and the wherewithal to actually do the job that he's in. And I felt like yesterday, going for nearly 2 hours in front of the press, and although you could see that he was definitely flagging by the end of it, his voice weakening by the end of that press conference, it seemed to me, Peter Ducey, that he was trying to prove that he does have the stamina, that he can make it.
Yeah, and so the two things I would say about that would be, number one, I think anybody after an hour and 50 minutes would be tired. but, you know, the other thing, I don't get a sense, I know Rosen's question was based on a poll. You know, if you look at Biden from years past, he has never been the most polished speaker, and sometimes he does pause, but that's not new. And so it gets noticed more since he is 79 and since there is all this uncertainty about whether or not he's actually going to run. I know yesterday he said he and Harris are going to run together. It's early. The line has just been, I intend to, but I was impressed that he did it. Cause again, except for like a primary debate, 2 years ago, I have not seen him on stage for that long. And with those things, you talk for like 1/10 of the time. Like it was the Joe show yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. What happens next for this White House? You know, he indicated yesterday that his legislative priorities remain. He wants to get this Build Back Better package passed. This is a gigantic social spending bill. And the suggestion that both he and other Democrats are making is that they want to break it up into smaller parts, make it easier for the Congress to handle. But it seems to me that the problem with that, Peter Ducey, is that they were trying to pass it under what we call reconciliation before, a budget maneuver that would allow them a simple majority vote in the Senate. They couldn't even get enough support for that. So how are they going to pass this piecemeal through a process that requires 60 votes in the Senate?
Yeah, well, they're apparently not, because Joe Biden said yesterday, we'll just break it up. And then Nancy Pelosi said, anybody saying that you can break it up with this reconciliation process doesn't understand the process. You can't break it up like that. So he's got problems with process at home. But you asked what comes next. Next, like World War III, maybe, in Eastern Europe, and this president is kind of hinting at us that based on the intel he's seen, he believes that Putin is going to move on Ukraine because he has to. And he's talking about this minor incursion, and the Ukrainians came out to say, you know, hey, an invasion is an invasion, American president. We get that you support us, but just let's be careful with our words here and what's okay and what's not. And so I think the focus is going to shift away from domestic policy and to foreign policy. And that's probably something that these White House officials like, because things are going poorly at home. They're losing, even though they control all of Congress. Prices are rising. Crime is rising. The border is a mess. So let's look 5,000 miles away.
Well, this is what I think a lot of Americans are concerned about, Peter Ducey, is to what extent are they going to look at a foreign dispute on somebody else's border as a good opportunity to create a distraction from the misery that we're experiencing back home, because they're rolling into midterms where all of the polling numbers indicate that their political opposition is set to be the beneficiary of their failures. And so I do think that the sentiment in the country is one of nerves. You know, you mentioned World War III. I think people are scared for that, and they're wondering what the hell's going on. Like, why we're really going to get into a massive foreign conflict potentially, and we've got enough problems back home to take care of. I mean, America's border didn't come up in yesterday's press conference, and a lot of it was spent on Ukraine and Russia.
And, you know, to hear the president say that Russia, yesterday at this event, to say Russia is militarily superior to Ukraine is notable anytime you hear it. But it's especially notable because this president has already taken American troops, sending American troops to Ukraine, off the table. And so it is a huge break. You know, previous presidents have not said what they won't do, what they definitely will not do in when it comes to armed conflicts or threats of allies so far in advance. And, you know, Putin's a planner. He's patient. I suspect that he heard Joe Biden. They're not going to send U.S. troops to Ukraine. And so what happens next, I don't think anybody at the White House is rooting for an armed conflict, but I definitely think they would rather be talking about that.
I mean, it does get to his wherewithal. I mean, he quite clearly, I thought yesterday, when he said things like, if it's a minor incursion, we're going to assess what we're going to do. It sounds to me like what happened was that he took what was supposed to be a classified strategy and presented it to the public, but is to the detriment of their overall strategy. He just sent a signal to Putin, yeah, we're not going to punish you if the incursion is, quote, minor. And I think that's why you've got a lot of people in Washington, including at the White House, facepalming this morning that he said something like that.
And, you know, what is so different for Joe Biden in 2022 than when he was a senator, or even really when he was a vice president, if something happens and Putin moves on Ukraine, that clip of him saying a minor incursion is excusable is going to get played. Everybody's going to be watching it on their phone. It's going to be plastered on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Like, that's going to be everywhere, all around the world.
That's right. It wouldn't be the first time something like that had happened. Remember Shut Down the Virus? Unbelievable. Peter Ducey.
Yeah. I was there.
yes, you were. Peter Ducey, the Fox News Channel. Thanks so much for giving us some time, man. I appreciate that.
Hey, thanks, Vince. Talk to you soon.
Let's go to line two. Russ is in Alexandria. Russ, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colanay Show.
Hey, Vince, I really got to ask you a favor.
Please.
And that is to stop calling yesterday's event a press conference. That was a televised visit to the memory care unit at the White House.
it was. So, I think you're right about that, Russ.
You usually call it like it is, but you missed it today.
Well, you're helping keep me on the straight and narrow. Thank you, Russ. I appreciate that.
All right.
Let's get Mike in Gainesville in here on line five. Mike, you're on the Vince Colanna Show.
Hey, Vince. Yeah, much along the same line. He had 5 days to prepare for that, and
that's
the first
right.
hour of it was so completely scripted. He literally had cards to read off what their names were and what their question was going to be and what his answer
was. Were you watching this? Did you keep an eye on it? I didn't really get to see it. I was hearing so much of this because it was happening during our program yesterday. You saw him reading off of these cards.
Yeah, the first hour, he had almost every question. He had some sort of, and it wasn't a small piece of paper. It was 8 by 11.5 or something that he would flip over and look at.
It's probably big font.
Times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we're giving him an awful lot of credit for standing there, and that's why he looked so confident in the first hour, is that he knew what was coming, and he already had the answers written out, and he was hopped up on something, and he just looked like he was really, really ready. But as soon as it got, you know, more rough and tumble, he started to stumble and stammer. And, you know, that crazy thing with the Bull Connor interchange about, I never called anybody Bull Connor.
Right.
I never said they were Bull Connor. Well, that would be crazy talk for anybody to think that you were actually calling someone actually Bull Connor. That's crazy talk from an old man. Someone should have said that out loud. Nobody ever said that. Instead of telling me to read what I said, you should remember what it is you said.
Oh, so I see. So you think what happened yesterday was a memory lapse. He doesn't even remember that he made that accusation.
Well, he's parsing the words, saying that I never actually claimed that they were physically Bull Connor. They were like it.
It's
that
amazing.
Literally his defense.
Amazing. It's truly amazing. Mike, thank you. Yep. Good insight.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. All right. Coming up, you know, the COVID craziness continues right here in the United States, thanks to Joe Biden and company, Dr. Anthony Fauci as well. But around the country, a bunch of companies are making some different decisions here. In fact, other countries are making some different decisions here. We're going to go over them coming up, 429. Good afternoon to you, 435 WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Coming up, Mercedes Schlapp will be with us at 5 o'clock. And then at 5:30 from the great New York Post, the great Stephen Nelson, one of the reporters in the room yesterday for the medical checkup of Joe Biden. you can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Boy, the COVID craziness really does continue in the United States, doesn't it? The Biden administration is cornering the market now on all of the available testing. They've like ruined testing for every state in the country. You have Governor Hogan in Maryland complaining that they can't get tests anywhere anymore because the federal government bigfooted the whole process and is now going to much more inefficiently distribute them. What a win. What a fantastic logistical victory. So the tests are going all over the place. They're not going to the right places. And then the Biden administration is sending out what these N95 masks to everybody. The goal is they want to send out like, you know, one or two masks to as many Americans as they can. One or two. These are supposed to be single-use masks that need to be properly fitted. Ask anybody in the healthcare industry or anybody who actually has to wear these for a living. They realize it's actually like a process to properly fit these things to make them worthwhile at all. In other words, like there's going to be most Americans are not going to go through the whole rigmarole of properly fitting a mask. And also for what purpose? And it's only single use. What is going on? It's busy work. It's designed to make the Biden administration look like they're doing something. Look at us. We're moving. We're being busy. You know, it reminds me when I was a kid. Now, before I tell this story, I should point out that I'm much better now about doing dishes and things and helping to clean up after dinner. My wife would kill me if I didn't. But when I was a kid, I just remember we would have like big Thanksgiving dinners, my brothers and I. Somebody would ask us after dinner, like, hey, can you come help clean up? Help clean up. And it's like family all over the place. I'm talking, this is a very busy place. I got a huge extended family. My dad's one of 9 kids. My mom's one of 7 kids. They got all their kids. It's pandemonium. So it's easy to kind of get lost in the crowd in an environment like that. But they'd ask, hey, can you come help us clean up? Yeah, sure. We'll help you clean up. Or we'd be told. It usually wasn't a question. Hey, go help everybody clean up. Okay, we'll go help. So you grab like the remaining bowl, what's left of the green bean casserole, and you walk it from the table to the kitchen and put it on the island right there in the kitchen, you know, to help with the dishes. But you don't really feel like doing anything else. So what you do is you keep picking the bowl up and you keep walking around the island and you put it down again. Then you walk back to the table with the same bowl. Then you take the same bowl and you walk back to the island. And basically, you just maintain constant motion. And then it looks like you're really helping. You're doing something and you kind of get lost in the noise. It's like, oh, he's doing something. Now, I've learned a lot of lessons since that time, since I was a kid pretending to help clean up after Thanksgiving dinner. But I got to say, I'm looking at the Biden administration and I go, look what they're doing. They're playing pretend. They're just trying to act busy. They're trying to pretend like they're doing something. They're picking up an empty bowl of green bean casserole, shuffling it all over the place and saying, we're conquering COVID. They're not doing anything like that. But the restrictions are here still, baby. And they're getting worse. You look at a place like Washington, D.C. Now, I've been avoiding D.C. like a normal human being who can take that option. Because I don't want to have to go through the whole entering a business and showing my ID and showing my vaccine card and getting approval to be in the business, being asked to leave once things are done. The whole thing is crazy. We've been hearing from you, those of you who've had to suffer through it, how crazy it is. Vaccine passports in Washington, D.C. Places like New York City doing this. Montgomery County wants their own. It's nuts what they're doing. In an environment where we've never needed these restrictions less, yet they're imposing more. In fact, Omicron as a virus has been so helpful. I know it's dangerous to say that, but it's been so helpful that like all these preposterous theatrical restrictions really don't have a rationale for existing. And everyone is catching COVID. Everybody you know has caught COVID now, haven't they? All over the place. And some of them are reporting tougher bouts. Oh, man, this thing really knocked me out. But for the most part, people are saying, yeah, it was just, you know, it was a cold. It was mild. I was able to get through it. Followed my doctor's advice. You know, stayed on the fluids. Stayed away from work like you do when you have the sniffles and you don't want to make other people sick. And that's it. They can move about with their lives. In fact, the New York Times is reporting, now admitting something that you and I have both known for a while. The New York Times admitted yesterday, infections are outperforming injections. Infections are outperforming injections. What do I mean by that? I think you know. Natural immunity is better than the vaccine. For people who haven't had the vaccine, but they have had COVID in the past, they're doing much better against any chance of being reinfected right now. But people who just had the vaccine and haven't had an infection, their chances are a little tougher. They're more likely to be infected, the New York Times admits. And where do they get that from? The Centers for Disease Control, which is now admitting this. They admitted yesterday. Previous infection with the coronavirus appeared to provide stronger protection against the Delta variant than did vaccination in a large sample of patients, the CDC finally reported on Wednesday. Researchers caution, in the long term, vaccination still offers the best defense against the virus. Now, they say the data were gathered before the widespread rollout of booster shots and the emergence of the Omicron variant, so the findings may not be relevant to the current surge. Of course they're relevant. Natural immunity plays a very relevant role to any future exposure to any variant of this virus, obviously. Ask anybody who studies this for real for a living. But that's some good, encouraging data and of value. And so if you are if you are in a workplace or if you're being told, you know, if you're trying to do business in Washington, D.C., and you haven't been vaccinated, but you were previously infected, your natural immunity should, of course, be relevant to your freedom of movement, your ability to go on with your daily life. But it's not. It's not. Despite the fact that the CDC admits it's better. Now, of course, there's a lot of throat clearing as they say all of this. They don't want anybody to go out, like, you know, people used to do these things where they'd expose their kids to chickenpox before the chickenpox vaccine existed in order to get them chickenpox early so they don't have to go through it again later. Because once you have chickenpox, you're inoculated against future chickenpox, right? And so what the press is doing and CDC, it's a lot of hemming and hawing, like, well, yes, admittedly, natural immunity is better, but don't take the risk. go get vaccinated. Okay. So that's their advice. So a lot of, heavy stipulation as they share this, I think, very good news, important news. But I told you what we have here in the United States right now is restrictions are getting tougher. They're becoming crazier. You have to do a vaccine passport. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, yesterday, Boris Johnson, the prime minister, is now announcing, the vaccine passport thing is ending here. So the UK and many other countries around the world have been much more authoritarian, even than our own country, as authoritarian as it has been. And even the authoritarian places are backing off. They're saying, no, we're going to drop the mask mandates. We're going to drop the vaccine passports. We're going to get rid of all of these requirements. Here's Boris Johnson. Take a listen to him making this announcement yesterday to the House of Commons.
We can return to Plan A in England and allow Plan B regulations to expire.
I love the cheering, by the way. It makes me so happy. We should definitely add this. This is one of the features we should add to our own Congress.
As a result, from the start of Thursday next week, mandatory certification will end. Organisations can, of course, choose to use the NHS COVID pass voluntarily, but we will end the compulsory use of COVID status certification in England.
That's vaccine passports. We're ending that.
From now on, the government is no longer asking people to work from home. Yeah. And people should now speak to their employers about arranging.
By the way, it kind of sounds like they're mailing it in on the cheering.
For returning to the office and having looked at the data carefully, the cabinet concluded that once regulations lapse, the government will no longer mandate the wearing of face masks anywhere.
Oh, that one's real. There's a real one.
Mr. Speaker.
There's joy. Do you hear that? The laughter? They're having such a great time.
Mr. Speaker, from tomorrow, we will no longer require face masks in classrooms. And the Department for Education will shortly remove national guidance on their use in communal areas.
All right. So Boris Johnson making a series of announcements. We're getting rid of all these crazy restrictions. There's no use. Time to get rid of them. And some excitement there. Now, meanwhile, you've also got Israel has decided that they want to back off of their own vaccine passports and their own, all of this. So here's, take a listen to this. This is a top Israeli official. He's one of the guys who is advising the Israeli government, and he thinks that it's time. He did a show called Unheard. It's time to back off of vaccine passports because the vaccine's not stopping infections. The whole point was that it would stop infections. It's not. The infection is everywhere. So here is the Israeli position, or at least this top advisor to the Israeli government, what he's saying about all this.
Are you now of the view that vaccine passports should be got rid of, phased out, because they're no longer relevant?
Muriel Bowser, if you're listening, please pay attention to what you're about to hear.
In the Omicron era.
I tend to think so. And we know, even if the Omicron actually is causing a lot of, reinfections, people that were vaccinated and, secondary infections, et cetera, we have to take into account that still the virus is better at immunizing than the vaccine.
Say what? The virus is better at immunizing than the vaccine. America's CDC admitting this after this interview.
Sorry, that means, so you're referring to this natural immunity phenomenon in other words.
I love how this guy's like, wait a second. This whole like natural immunity thing that the crazies have been talking about. Are you serious? Natural immunity is like a thing?
To some extent, but that doesn't mean that I am encouraging people to go and get disease in order to prevent from getting the disease. Mm.
So does Israel still have vaccine passports?
What do you mean?
Does Israel still have a green pass policy?
We do have that, but it's not too much enforced. Let's face it, especially now with the Omicron. We're
not really enforcing it, he says, because he's pointing out there's no point to.
Two days ago, we canceled the green pass for malls. Okay, there's no longer
no vaccine passports at the mall anymore.
Would say, a significance to that step of having a green pass in malls.
You expect it to be cancelled entirely soon?
I believe so. You know, the other...
He says that he does think vaccine passports are going away very soon in Israel.
You have also to understand that the green pass is not necessarily, and that's not a secret, it's not necessarily to prevent transmission. It's also to encourage people to get vaccinated.
Okay, so he's giving away the game here. What he's explaining is that the vaccine passports, as they're being used in Israel and all around the planet, they're not actually to stop infection. You hear what he's saying, especially in the, as he put it, the age of Omicron. No, they're to compel compliance to get vaccinated against a disease that'll still infect the vaccinated. But again, even this guy who's admitting this game is saying, yeah, the vaccine passports, they're useless and they're going away soon.
And I don't want to touch upon the political aspects of the Green Pass, but this is a reality. So right now, you know, you also get get to a point where whoever wanted to get vaccinated got vaccinated.
Right.
I don't think that there is a point right now in maintaining a green pass, especially in the Omicron era.
In the Omicron era, there's no point in maintaining this green pass. Now, additionally, so we look around the planet, we see a bunch of countries in Europe who are deciding this is the way to go. I see some reporting today from the Associated Press that in Spain, the posture they're taking is, well, maybe we just have to learn to live with the virus. Really? Because that's what the great Barrington Declaration guys were saying years ago. It's good to see you finally coming around to that conclusion 2 years later. And they're not alone. A number of countries around the planet now taking up that position. Starbucks, the American coffee chain, you can find it all over the place, of course, liberal company, leftist company, has decided that they're getting rid of their vaccine mandate for employees. They had a deadline coming up for employees to be vaccinated, but they realized that what's happening is that people are leaving the job because they don't want to do it. And so they've surrendered. They've surrendered because they actually need people to work at these coffee shops. So no more vaccine mandate at Starbucks. Something is changing. But of course, you see people in power on the left who are still maintaining the punishment, the hurt, the tyranny on vast sectors of our society without any underlying rationale for it. Dave's in Alexandria on line two calling in about this subject. Dave, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colanay Show.
Yeah, hi. How are you, Vince?
I'm good, sir.
My thought about vaccine mandates, I mean, they really are ridiculous. I mean, the only ones being hurt are businesses in D.C., as well as, the government, D.C. government coffers. They're being denied tax revenue. And as someone who lives in Virginia, has a concealed carry permit, and I do conceal carry, I and friends, you know, can't go into D.C. and spend money. Again, businesses are losing money. D.C. government coffers are losing out because we, as law-abiding citizens, can't go into D.C. and conceal carry. But all the criminals can be in D.C. and
That's
conceal
right.
carry.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, D.C. mayors in particular. There's people who are not Democrats, but they register as Democrat in the city because that's really the only election that matters, right? The primary elections in Washington, D.C. And they would vote for, Republicans would vote just to keep the corrupt official in power, you know, because D.C. has had a long legacy of corrupt mayors. And the game is just keep the corrupt guy in power because he won't meddle with your life too much. Like, the only thing he's really looking to do is line his pockets. But for the most part, he's going to leave you alone. So it was almost like the libertarian vote was to keep the corrupt official in play. And what's happening here is Muriel Bowser, as mayor in Washington, D.C., sort of whatever corruption she may be guilty of, she's meddling with everybody's lives. She's like making everybody more miserable. She's placing all these ridiculous restrictions and in the process destroying the city, Dave.
And if I'm not mistaken, she looked like at the beginning of her term or during the campaign, she looked like she might be finally a mayor that D.C. residents deserve to have, someone who is competent and has the best interests of D.C. residents at heart. But I don't think it's turning out to be the case.
No. She's ended up being a willing lieutenant for the most radical causes. And that just keeps happening over and over and over again, unfortunately, to the detriment of a great city. We live in a crazy country, don't we? A totally crazy country. Can you believe that 45% of Democrats favor the government forcing people into designated facilities until they get vaccinated? What a crazy poll. That, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this week, but if you're wondering why things are crazy, like a lot of the population is crazy. That's a nuts response. Donna's in Frederick on line one. Donna, go ahead real quick.
Hi, I'm not buying what that poll's selling. It just doesn't sound right to me because so many have walked off the Democrat plantation. I'm just not buying that whole story.
Oh my gosh.
I'd like to know more about who they polled, you know, who they got. But yeah. As far as Biden goes, I think they're kind of focusing on him because they don't want us focusing on all the devious things they're doing in the background.
Oh, there's a lot of people jumping off the ship. Yeah, no, they're blaming him. They're trying to tag him with the problems. Like, oh, don't blame us as everything's collapsing and they're holding the matches. I don't know. I think I mixed up my metaphors there. The point is destruction is everywhere. They're responsible. Is that good for you? All right, coming up, Mercedes Schlapp is joining us just minutes away.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.